So welcome back to another episode of Blockcast. I'm your host, Reggie, a.k.a. your chief financial coconut.
Hi, I'm Mark, and I'm the founder and CEO of Blockhead.
This is Timothy Mazier, managing editor at Blockhead.
Osebo, Boss Lee here.
It still giggles me, even though we've been opening, at right? it for... It is a good opening, bro.
He waits for the right moment.
Yeah. Jose Bo, right? Everybody, right? So recently, not very Jose, right? So
Jose, that's the SEC thing.
Yeah. Isn't that your usual line?
Did you guys feel kind of like a bit tired of the drama already?
Yeah, and actually, I think we've been talking about it for a while, and it's like, oh my god, again. But this week sounds like a big one. Sounds like it is causing a lot of shit. So yeah, come. Okay, let's jump straight.
Let's just jump right into it, right? So I'm sure most of the audience would have been, I guess, you've been tuning into this podcast. You know, you guys would know that we've been talking about the SEC and the aggressive actions against some of the more blue chip exchanges that are based out of the US, Binance US and Coinbase, like being the key names. So I would say this should be a round five, really. Round six, if you want to import like boxing terminology here, right?
Ding ding,
right? So the SEC has recently applied to kind of for a restraining order against Binance. I think that this would severely restrict its business operations in the US. There's also been, I think, if I'm not wrong, an order to, or rather, like, you know, like an emergency order to kind of freeze withdrawals, right, from Binance. You know, so I think that. In response, you have CZ coming out to say that this would, you know, irreversibly damage Binance's ability to do business in the US. And I think that, you know, the long story short of this is that just the latest in an ongoing, you know, series of lawsuits that, like it or not, I feel like it adds to just this broad narrative that the US is anti-crypto right now, whether it's true or not. I think that narrative is starting to become entrenched. So that I would say the first big story of the day that we can discuss.
No, but the crux of this story and this particular SEC drama is that there's quite a lot of outflows, right? And that it's causing
impact,
a lot. Yeah, it is not
is
just
huge.
A narrative. It's not just a narrative.
Oh no,
right?
When I say narrative, I think that, you know, I don't mean it from like a touch and go thing. I think in this case, that narrative has a lot of impact, right? Like you have a combined net outflow of 3.1 billion. Right, via Ethereum and another 864 million in Bitcoin, but it was reported last Monday to Thursday. It is a kind of a bank run on exchanges, you know, in Binance, right? And it's easy to see why, because, you know, people are scared. Yeah.
I mean, they are concerned, you cannot withdraw from Binance. There was a lot of misinformation coming out on CT, the crypto Twitter as well. So, after the SEC incident on Binance and also Coinbase. So one of the things coming out from one of the information was that they might stop the operations of Binance. But this information wasn't clear, right? Because it was there was two entities, the Binance US and Binance International. So people are also concerned whether if the operation stop, will their fund be locked up or not. But there was a small TNC or some notes that it says that even the operation stops, right? So if today I want Binance US operation to stop, customers are still able to withdraw their assets. But this information wasn't truly out there. Right? The core information was, operation's going to stop. We have to pull everything out. That's why you see an outflow. Another outflow I see personally is from those funds. Can be VC funds, private equity, whatever that are. Have a small chunk. Their small chunk is a wheel size. But so for them, they also don't want to, you know, get into all these legal issues, right? And so some of them will exit or just let it go. So the past weekend was quite painful, right? At least I feel those in crypto, there was a big drop. There was a sell-off. That's how I see the outflow coming out from SEC. But overall, there has been many rounds. Myself, who is also very bullish of crypto, is getting a bit tired of this. So when are they going to stop?
I think the important question here is why is this happening? I'm not sure whether you guys have any views on this. Why do they seem to be going after these crypto exchanges?
I have a view. I think two things. One thing is that they never find a proper way to tax it. Because anything that happens in the DeFi space, there's no way to exactly tax it. You have to depend on the person to actually, if you are in US, you have to actually report yourself, give the transaction to your accountant and do the tax filing and all. So that's one. And number two is, I think cryptocurrency as a whole, from this is just pure guessing, it can be a replacement for US dollar, like Bitcoin, like the stability, yep. Right? So you are kind of like a threat. So if I can bring you down now, then I will try to bring you down. But it's pure speculation on my end.
No, I don't think
it's just speculation.
I don't think speculation, especially with the USD.
I think there's
portion,
some consensus with the Maxis, yeah, you know, on that line. Really, really, really. And even to be fair, even I'm not a Maxi, I also think that that's the main reason why the US now is trying to like hunker down, right? Because it's gotten too serious and there's a lot of money flowing out into another system. And if this other system can kind of thrive along, right, then it challenges the US's system. And
exactly.
I think the economy is 80% anchored on services in the US, you know, which is directly, indirectly all tied to the Wall Street and the financial sector, right? So whether is it the legal, the business administrative, you know, a lot of the financial markets, they're all tied together. And if one kena, all will kena. It's quite serious. So yeah.
My worry is that like I feel that knowing the US, right, what should actually be a bipartisan issue, there is a tendency for this to actually become like really politicized. I mean, like, there's already been talk about, you know, like the next presidential election and then whether like, you know, like the new candidate is going to be, you know, pro crypto, anti crypto, you know?
I mean, this is an aside, but yeah, you know, the Miami mayor, Francis Soros, like the Bitcoin friendly guy, he has just submitted his bid for the US presidential race. As a Republican candidate.
Yeah, so the thing about this is that, you know, I mean, if this entire crypto digital asset, you know, like community, right, the ethos has always been like, you know, they shun party politics, right? And then, you know, the idea here is to...
Rubbish.
Rubbish. I mean, okay, la, you know what I mean? I'm just
no,
kind
no,
of
I
like...
Think, I think my main thing that I always found it very puzzling was how like crypto has been trying to court mainstream finance for a while, right? For the past year or so, I think maybe slightly longer, you know, to try to court mainstream finance and try to like integrate themselves back into TradFi or something, right? And abiding by TradFi standards, trying to get like big investors to come in and all that jazz. And it's just, to me, it's fundamentally weird, right? Because it challenges the baseline of why this whole thing even started. But I'm not an ideologue. Like, I just, as an observer out there, I just find it very weird, but yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what they believe internally, but then like, I think when it comes to practice, like, you know, I think it's very confusing.
It is. But I think more interestingly is that a lot of altcoins, you know, have just kind of like fallen through, you know, like 20-30% over the past week, man. Like, you know, Solana, Polygon, Binance, you know, a lot of those shit, they're all down. Okay, not say shit lah, but they have been shit over the past weekend. So yeah, any thoughts? Like, is this permanent or is it just like a swing type of situation?
The particular set of tokens or rather coins that drop significantly, right, are the cryptocurrency that SEC deem as security. So they have a list that they share because they need to try to sue Coinbase, right? And they say, yeah, listing this particular set of tokens that are securities. So this particular set, I mean, they fall dramatically, like Matic, Polygon. So of course, with the SEC, sue Binance, Coinbase, then plus this whole thing that drop, then the rest of the altcoins all drop. But if you pay attention to BTC and ETH, actually the drop is very minimal, right? It's like a few percent.
3%, 5%.
One of the reasons could be a typical person could, since BTC or ETH is not currently recognized as a security by a community, yet a cryptocurrency, why not I shift, right? So I sell off my Polygon, for example, I move it to BTC. That's one of the things that I see during the weekend and for the token sell-off.
Okay, so this whole like security commodity thing, I know we've been talking about it, but then does it fundamentally affect the chain itself, like Polygon, Solana, like this chain itself? It doesn't, right? So then is there still fundamental value in them? Or is it just me trying to like dig into something that is a trap? Like, will it ride through such that it will revalue itself?
I think in my opinion, like once the dust has settled in the US and then like, you know, like once they've kind of, the SEC has extracted the pound of flesh, you know, here, it is not going to be a permanent dip, in my opinion, because this doesn't affect these chains on a fundamental level. I think it really comes down to how these coins or tokens are eventually traded on exchanges and whether these exchanges, you know, can be compliant.
Yeah.
Reggie raises a good point that the US crypto crackdown.
Bro, I'm a full timer in this. I raise good points for life.
I mean, So this, because this whole market that is cracking down on, so far it's just all speculative rather than practical. So there's minimal risk for the SEC to go.
That's what they argue, yeah. But I mean, there is some logic in the argument.
So for me, it's just, I just really want to understand, is this like a fundamental shift which doesn't look like it, or as compared to if it's like just a kind of market momentum, liquidity moving in and out type of situation, which looks more like what is happening now, right? Out of fear, there's a move, and then there's a momentum swing, everybody moves out, and then, market finds a low, maybe when it's settled in, it will come back. I'm not sure, okay, but it's just trying to understand. Doesn't look like there is real fundamental change to some of these chains, but it has caused many other things, right? Even with like big trading platforms like Robinhood, eToro, they all kind of like drop some of these tokens, and what have you, right? So it's quite interesting.
But I mean, I reckon after like the rules become clearer, then this might actually take a while, they will start listing these tokens again. It's just a question of whether like if these are in fact securities, right, then how they will be traded in the platforms would be very similar to like your mainstream stock exchanges. You just want to buy a stock and the issue of like how do they keep custody of like these tokens and customer monies, etc. There'll be a lot of clarity there.
At the end of the day, crypto is global. Like 10 years ago when the US Financial Crimes Enforcement Regulation took place, the effect of it was that crypto grew in Asia and in the Middle East. And I guess that's what we will see again now, with non-US based exchanges like Huobi, OKX, Bybit and all that, they will take market share from Binance. Places like Hong Kong might be the only viable option for crypto firms. So, it's Asia's time to shine with the outflow from the US.
It's time in the sun. Ho ho.
And today there's a news from Financial Times about HSBC and StanChart being pressured to onboard customer,
Hong Kong
crypto customer
clients. Hong Kong wants its banks on board its digital asset push. Yeah.
Moving fast and furious.
Interesting. Yeah, so we will
From listeners' perspective, right, I'm guessing they might be interested, with all this, crackdown and all, right? So, is it safe to hold cryptocurrency, right? Because people listening to this will be one of the questions, right? Oh, with all this crackdown, is it necessary to take all this risk?
Are we going to talk about cold wallets again, guys?
No, it's not about cold wallet. This is about price. It's not about losing that shit. It's about whether this will continue to fall another 30% over the weekend, right? So yes, come boss, give us your take.
No lah. Or maybe portfolio management.
Yes. Of course, portfolio. Please don't put everything in. But okay, I know it challenges your baseline assumption. But yeah, come, please tell me.
Oh, no lah. So my thinking is, so you asked the question earlier, right? So the fundamental doesn't change. The blockchain wouldn't stop working because Polygon chain will still continue to work even if you remove with all these lawsuits, right? The chain are still working.
Mm.
So the code is law. That's what they say. If you believe,
B-U-L-L,
you need to believe, then
awesome.
Maybe,
that is just lame, it's awesome.
You need to believe, then...
Okay, never mind. What can I expect from the guy that always opens with Hosebo, right? Believe should be something that comes out of him. But yeah.
If you believe it will come the halving, then I think it's good to have some allocation of BTC and ETH. I think these are the two blue chips that are, first of all, not recognized as security and commodity, kind of escape all the legal issues. Plus, they are blue chip, so it's not painful to hold some of them. Because if you believe, technology will always surpass all these things in the long run.
Reverse to mean, huh?
I mean, the issue is that the SEC is going after the exchanges because they're saying what they're doing is illegal. They're nothing to do with the chains or the tokens. I mean, yes, certain tokens in the SEC's views are illegal, which is why what these exchanges are doing are illegal. But, at the end of the day, the only entities that are affected are the trading platforms, and only in the US. Which brings us to the next story we want to discuss. Uniswap V4. Is it going to be the next big thing, or is it more of just the same?
So Uniswap V4 just released, and there are a bunch of features inside. So for listeners who don't know what is Uniswap, it is a decentralized exchange. Right. So touching back a little bit about the exchange. So today, even if you don't have Binance, Huobi, or whatever exchange out there, if you have the Uniswap, is still running because it's decentralized and it's just sitting on the chain, and it's powered by smart contracts. So you can go there, easily change your ETH or WBTC or any other tokens to USDT or whatever tokens you want, right? It's a decentralized exchange. So Uniswap has come a long way. They did a lot of improvement. So the previous improvement was V3, that was concentrated liquidity. That was one of the key topics in V3. V4, there are three new things. So number one, gas is king. Why is this? Because there are a lot of big improvement in terms to optimize gas, especially gas fee. So you don't want to be like changing $100 of ETH to USDT, but pay a gas fee of $20.
Yeah.
Then this one very painful.
Stupid.
So
yes.
V4 optimize on this. So the second thing about Uniswap V4 is flash loan. So to understand flash loan, right? So what is it? Because on the blockchain, everything is via smart contract. Technically, some people are doing this, especially those people that are arbitraging. They do flash loan. So for example, there are a lot of DEXs. Uniswap is a DEX. Let's say Balancer is also a DEX. So let's say if you can swap ETH to USDT, $99 on Uniswap, and you can do that. But on Balancer, because of the liquidity issue, just for example, right, you can get it at $98. So what people can do is they can go to Aave, a lending and borrowing protocol, right? They can do a flash loan. Flash loan is everything that takes place in one transaction. What it does is it goes to Aave, borrow money, go to Balancer, buy ETH, take the ETH, go to Uniswap and sell the ETH to get that $1 difference.
Shit.
All that in one transaction. All that in one transaction.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah, so
I get it.
Do that via millions of dollars. One, like one flash loan, 200 million, so that the $1 makes sense, right? It wouldn't be like changing the $20.
But this
has an efficiency because like you only use one gas and all. So Uniswap V4 tries to, in your normal swap, right, they try to implement this kind of structure so that, again, the goal is to optimize gas and the capital efficiency so that the slippage will not be too high.
The goal is to integrate the business so that they can suck in this business as a feature into their own ecosystem. So for clarity's sake, right, boss, essentially this V4 thing will allow people to use that kind of flash accounting structure inside Uniswap itself. They don't need to go to another platform to do it, right?
Actually, flash loan has always been there.
Yeah.
But it needs to be manually done. Like, for example, you need to write code to execute all this. Right now, they use this structure, right? This set of technique or this set of mechanic and implement it in a normal swap so that you can achieve capital efficiency, less slippage, and also better gas.
Mm.
So they take that concept and make it easier for retailer just to do a normal change.
Okay.
Because again, the key thing is gas, ma. You don't want to be like doing $100 but pay $20 kind of thing.
I get it.
Then the third thing is hook management. Now this one, I also a bit confused because you can think of it like they have a open API or they have this hook contract, right? Where users, so if you are into smart contract development, you can write custom logic to do the execution for the swap on Uniswap V4. And after this Uniswap V4 launch with this hook management, right? People are already writing, trying and learning to write all those custom logic. And you can find all this on GitHub. I also having trouble trying to understand management. It's like, it's getting, like Uniswap V3 was complicated. Like, I have to say Uniswap V3 was complicated because it is concentrated liquidity on the price range. I think this one need to explain very long, but Uniswap V4, just this hook management alone, I think is
even crazier.
Very complex. Yeah, even more crazy.
Okay, we have a
because you can do custom logic.
So if I want to be a crypto trader, I also got to be a coder now.
You need to be a quant and a coder at the same time because you can implement custom logic how to do all this stuff.
Basically, these are like what? Pool customization and like...
No, basically, Tim, these are Insti products, right? They have already been around for a lot of the Insti traders in TradFi, right? And now you start to see them, you know, manifest in other ways in even in the DeFi world.
Yeah. The plus thing is that, okay, so again, decentralized, everyone can do it. So today, let's say Tim, you read out on smart contract, you spend 6 months, go dive super deep in. You can also, it's not like Insti only, right? Like Insti product put into a place where everyone can use.
Yes.
Today, if I have the skill set, I spend 9 months chunk smart contract and I realize, hook this management, I can do it this way to get some gains, then I can also do it.
Mm.
It's not like only institution can do it. You can do it like $20. It's just whether is it worthwhile to do it with $20. but at the same time, it also provides job opportunity. If you are a blockchain analyst or like into data science and you want to dip deeper into hook management, how can you do this? Maybe next time when when the banks and all these, the institution, they really want to get onto DeFi, then they might need this kind of talent, right? So explain to me what is hook management. Then maybe there's a talent that can explain to him and help them to execute all this, but on Uniswap. before.
Okay, and today's episode is brought to you by Lifelong Learning Institute. Okay, haven't. NTUC something. Okay, great. Anyone of you got any other thing to ask for Uniswap? It sounds damn cool, yeah.
It makes things more complicated, or it's for the better?
Okay, so on the just retail the user, trader, you don't really care. La. You just go there and use because it's going to have capital efficiency and lower gas. Mm. But for the smart contract engineers and all these that can do a lot more things with all those hook management and all, it's a big plus. It's like having more tools for them. It's the same like what Reggie said just now, right? So like the banks do a lot of crazy things behind the scene because they have a lot of tools, but retail users just go in and just deposit and lend money and borrow money.
Exactly the idea. Cool.
I mean, this kind of trade customization has been available on centralized exchanges for a while now, right? So does this like do anything to challenge, you know, their dominance?
Will DeFi finally win, right? I think that's the question, right? Will DeFi finally win?
There has been a report, I think last 2 months that I've seen that the DEX, that means decentralized exchange, right, the volume are picking up compared to centralized exchanges. Mm. Because you know, one of the big things is that when you are using DeFi, you are actually holding your token, right? You are not like giving the access to someone. For example, I have my asset on MetaMask and I go to Uniswap and swap and the token comes back to me. It's not like I have my asset on Coinbase and if something happened to Coinbase, then what am I going to do? So there has been a surge of volume towards DEX. I am pro DeFi, lah. Yeah. Oh, I just like to add one last thing. Uniswap V4 is quite complicated, lah, so I might not have fully comprehended. And so there might be some mistakes. So.
I think in my opinion, like your selling point for like, you know, DeFi has always been as what Boss Lee has mentioned. Lah. So I think it's, you know, it's new with Uniswap V4. I think if anything, you know, if this even brings the user experience in line with what we see on like, you know, like centralized exchanges, right? You know, it could actually really lead to a lot more adoption.
Wait, but actually it's not as complicated. Do y'all know what's a CDP account?
Yeah.
Right. So it just sounds like it's a CDP account on the SGX, right? Like the difference between you directly buying on a broker, which is a centralized exchange, is that actually in name, right, the equity belongs to them. You don't own it, they own it, but you have the rights to get
you it. Have a contract, you have a contract,
you have a contract with
yourself
them
and the exchange.
So you get from them, right? And correct. Whereas if you register a CDP account, which is in SGX, which is you can integrate with SGX, then all the shares that you own in the CDP account is belongs to you. Right. And you can do a lot of wonderful things with that. Like you can go to the banks and say that with this CDP account, I have 300,000. I want to get share financing from you. Right. So then you can do that. At the same time, because you own the shares in your CDP account, you can buy from this exchange and sell at another exchange. And it's cheaper that way. So rather than you go to one exchange and calculate, right? And then that is the centralized exchange. This CDP ecosystem is kind of DeFi-ish, you know, which I think that's kind of where you
in
can
principle.
Think
okay, that's actually a really interesting analogy.
In principle,
Reggie.
it is DeFi-ish, right? You own it and you go to different exchanges to do your transaction and you still own the shares. You can still go to the bank to get financing. That is quite DeFi, what? Right? Like you actually own the
partially
thing of your
partially,
own.
Partially. Yeah, partially. CDP hosts your... Yeah, CDP is a centralized
but no, like the SGX
right?
CDP,
yes,
they still own your... They own the access to it, right?
But it's different because the CDP is not a private entity trying to profit out of you, right? It is a central entity that is trying to legal manage this whole shit lah. But that's something to think about. I think it makes it easier for you to understand like the idea behind.
So like, you know, instead of like having like a for-profit like entity managing your shares, now basically you have like, you know, kind of like a, it's not a stat board, right? Is it a stat board? No,
it's not a stat board. It's just a tool that the SGX created on some level. Okay, so that's it for Uniswap. I think there's a lot more to cover as we go along. But today we have the big piece, right? The investigative journalism piece, right? Up Timothy's alley, right? So Tim, you want to bring us through the fun story? Because the first two very heavy. Whoever that stayed till now already, their brain died already.
Well, I mean, the story that you are referring to is something that we've been working on for the past week or two. It's about the ongoing court case that Babel Finance has been involved in. Just a bit of background, right? So Babel Finance is a Chinese crypto mining bank, provided loans to crypto miners for a cut of the proceeds. They moved their operations to Singapore when China started cracking down on this space. And then they just became essentially a trading firm for high net worth individuals and institutions. They lost about $1 billion last year in crypto winter when everything went south. Basically, they had bet big on crypto long and essentially lost everything. What's going on right now is that they have in court with their creditors who are unhappy with their restructuring plan. We've gone through or had a look at all the affidavits, hundreds and hundreds of pages. But essentially what's going on now is that Babel has proposed the introduction of this thing called Babel Recovery Coins to repay its debt through its co-founder's new project called Hope.
I'm sorry.
You couldn't have chosen a better name, Yeah.
But it's called buying a hope, you know?
Okay, guys. So what they plan to do is they already messed up the shit. They lost $1 billion. They die, right? Then they're going to issue this other coin called Hope to raise money to give hope to the investors of the thing that failed previously.
Correct.
I'm sorry.
And the best part about it, all the creditors know that, there's just no hope of, kind of getting their money back except for this one, right? And so it's amazing. When you actually read the affidavits, right, it's like, you have the founder of of Babel literally saying, it is now a huge accounting problem. And this is, I'm not quoting verbatim, okay? So just it's a gist, right? It's a huge accounting problem at the moment because all of our creditors' money are all lumped into one account and we don't know whose money is whose. That's literally printed in the affidavit, number one. Number two, all this money is in this company that is not even, it is tied to Babel in the sense that it's part of the Babel group, okay? But it's all in this company called Moon Alpha, okay? And Moon Alpha, right, was a Hong Kong registered company, right, that Flex Young, the founder, started, a few years ago before, Babel actually came along, right? It only just got registered in Singapore, right, sometime at the start of this year when they knew that legal proceedings or a liquidation or restructuring kind of proceeding, right, was actually imminent. So they needed the company to be here so they could kind of justify and say, hey, actually, this company is registered here. Therefore, it's kosher for all your money to be in there. It's actually ridiculous. There's a lot going on here, but the idea that you have a whole bunch of creditors that just transferred millions of dollars to Babel, and then somehow Babel doesn't know how to kind of do the accounting because all the funds are just commingled. And the funds are not even under the Babel account. They're under this company called Moon Alpha.
Moon Alpha, wow. Luna will come and save you.
It's just a comedy of errors,
it's a comedy of names, bro. It's
approve
these branding names anyway.
Anybody
please.
Reading this, right? You just read it and don't even need to kind of no allegations, nothing. How is this not fraudulent? That is actually one of the things that it hasn't gotten to that point because, it's all, there's still. So what's happening right now is that Babel actually has successfully applied for a moratorium, bankruptcy protection, none of the creditors can actually actually put forward any claims on the money, right, until Babel gets its restructuring plans in place, right? And then so the biggest joke of this all is that the plan is this new token called Hope.
But I think the biggest learning lesson of it all is that don't be afraid of bankruptcy. Bankruptcy is actually a protection mechanism. But that is a different discussion altogether. A lot of people are very afraid of bankruptcy. Actually, bankruptcy support you one, not support the others. Right? Yeah. Depending on what you're trying to do. So yeah. And so what's happening here, Tim? Is this just gonna be dead? Or are we just trying to tell our audience don't ever believe in hope. Don't buy.
Most of our audience would have nothing to do with this case. It's very interesting just from an observer's point of view. The article is pretty long and detailed on blockit.co. Have a look. It basically brings you up to speed to where we're at with what's going on with Babel, what they say they're going to do with their new project, Hope, and the mechanisms of its Babel recovery coin. Supposedly pegged to the dollar, backed by BTC and ETH, and intended to be used to pay back creditors. So the issue now is that creditors are not happy with this whole plan, So just have a look. You can make your own.
I think the other point to kind of really make here is that you think about the money that's actually been lost, right? It's a lot of money, right? But the reason why this actually hasn't garnered enough the same kind of public attention as what's happened with HODLNOT, for example, right? Is it simply because FTX. It's just a bunch of companies and rich individuals losing their money. In terms of just optics, right? Not enough people are pissed off. But just to share some color on what these guys are like. So they used to, rent the ex-DBS office at OUE downtown. It's a massive space.
Two floors.
And talking about grade A commercial building, right? And then we had meetings in the office with them in the early days, right? And they'd be smoking inside the CEO room. So handing out Chinese cigarettes to everybody. Right, so
Very proud that the fact that the room used to be occupied by Piyush Gupta.
Yeah. So like, you know, we were just kind of like smoking cigarettes in like Piyush Gupta's ex-room la, with these jokers. So like...
Hope. You can only hope. You can only hope.
So right now, I guess the court decision is going to hinge on whether, you know, Babel or Moon Alpha can provide sufficient evidence to support their claims and address the creditor concerns, the one in this case being Deribit. So this also proving the viability of BRC, transparency of the accounting practices and legitimacy of their connection to Singapore. And then the court also need to determine if Babel or, you know, Moon Alpha, whether their proposed restructuring plan is feasible and fair to the creditors. But this is just another one of these crazy cases that you only see in the crypto space.
Yeah. It continues to babble. So yeah, it is what it is.
Long way to go for the crypto industry. But
for sure, yeah.
I think this bear market is not good for my portfolio, boho say. But it kind of like get rid of all this.
Weeds out the shit.
Weeds out the shit, right? Because if you cannot hold, means all these things will get exposed and all.
And it's the same with every industry, even the insurance industry, a lot of them, right? Because when shit comes down, all get hit, all kena, the payout cannot, they close. And then, you know, after a few rounds, the stronger ones will stay. Right?
Yeah, I mean, so, it's easy to ride a bull run, but when everything like, you know, dries up, then...
What do you do, right?
Yeah.
That's the real question. Nice. So yes, another crazy weekend in crypto. Hopefully we have something a little bit more stable. But okay, actually stable, then got no news we can't cover. Right. So that's the problem.
Rocky roads ahead.
Rocky roads ahead.
No,
so, yeah.
If it's stable, then we can pursue what Boss Lee was talking about.
The Hosei stuff, is it? Yeah, yeah. How to DeFi, right? We need to do the more Hosei stuff. Cannot keep always do the Bo Hosei stuff. But yeah, cool. So any last words from anyone? If not, that will be the end.
It comes down to how much you believe.
No, believe. That shouldn't be the last one.
Is that our next t-shirt? Because
I'm
not going to wear that.
No. Actually, it's a very cool
t-shirt.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
B-U-L-L-I-E. Copyrighted trademark.
Yeah.
I'll register before you. I'm going to register the website. So yeah, that's it for today. Go get us. Take care. And we'll see you next week. Bye guys.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Unbelievable. Hey Coconuts, so yes, I hope you enjoyed this new show that we're building together with the team at Blockhead. And the goal is very clear, right? We're not here to shill any token or be a cheerleader for any project, but we feel that there's a lot of development that's going on in this space that we could cover and continue to be a little bit smarter as investors. I mean, eventually you tune in every week to a financial podcast network so that you can be smarter with your investments. And if it so happens this is something that you're looking at, the crypto space, Web3, Metaverse, all these kind of stuff, and that is where we're trying to cover, but not from the angle of like this is good, that is bad, but really trying to see it from like what is happening, how is it developing. And I hope you find this useful and interesting, right? So if you want to continue to get more coverage around the crypto space, check out blockhead.co, and then we will see you next week.